Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
If Congress can't reach a deal, the federal government effectively turns into a cash and carry operation. It can only spend what it has on hand.
A looming federal debt default could hit hard in Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 25th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, utilities try to meet Alaskans' energy needs despite a steady decline in Cook Inlet natural gas.
We haven't got a gas pipeline yet, even though we've been talking about it for 40 years, and we've also never gotten at a hometown discount on oil and gas in Alaska.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAIN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The U.S. Supreme Court today issued a decision limiting the Environmental Protection Agency's authority over wetlands, and the implications for Alaska could be substantial. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has more.
Governor Mike Dunleavy applauded the ruling, saying it will help promote responsible development in Alaska. The case, called Sackett versus EPA, is about what constitutes waters of the United States, meaning how far inland and upland the Clean Water Act applies. One project that could be affected is the proposed Pebble Mine upstream from Bristol Bay. In January, the EPA used its veto authority under the Clean Water Act to block the project. Pebble CEO John Shively says the implications of the case aren't clear yet, but he says the ruling helps move the EPA's authority closer to what Congress intended. Until now, property owners have needed a federal permit, for instance, to fill a bog or stream, if there's a significant nexus between that bog or stream and a larger waterway that's considered navigable. With the Sackett decision, the court says the federal law applies only if there's a continuous surface connection between the area and a navigable waterway. Attorney Bridget Passarianos at the environmental law firm Trustees for Alaska predicts it will be a tough test to follow in Alaska.
I know we see that in Alaska a lot, right? We have these big braided rivers that tend to shift and move. There's many, many places that are suffering from a lot of erosion. The erosion is a huge problem, and so it's changing where a lot of these waterways are.
Pebble Mine opponent Alana Hurley, director of United Tribes of Bristol Bay, says the Sackett case isn't a threat to the EPA's determination blocking the mine, but Hurley calls it, quote, incredibly concerning, unquote, because it limits protections for critical wetlands, rivers, and lakes. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Alaska depends heavily on federal dollars, perhaps more than any other state, so the prospect of the federal government defaulting on its debt is on the minds of many Alaskans. That's because if Congress fails to raise the country's debt limit in the next few days, it could affect the government's ability to pay for everything from food stamps to fisheries workers. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks wrote about the potential impacts to Alaska from a debt default recently. The usually unflappable Brooks says even he is worried.
And right now, I have the same feeling as if I'm at a family reunion and Uncle Bob is telling everyone he's gonna take the four-wheeler off a sick ramp he built. And in this case, Uncle Bob is carrying everybody's paychecks.
Not again, Bob.
Not again, Bob. Alaska is really dependent on the federal government and federal spending. About 5% of all jobs in the state are federal jobs. More than a third of the state's budget is paid for with federal dollars. We have lots of federal retirees. We have active duty military. We have industries like tourism, fishing, oil and gas that depend in large part on the actions of the federal government to keep going. And if there's any kind of interruption in that, that has really severe consequences here. And we saw that back in 2019.
What would the immediate effects be in Alaska if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling by June 1st?
The shorter answer is we can't say with any certainty, because not even the Secretary of the Treasury at this point can say when the federal government would go into default. But there seems to be a window of high risk. Between about June 1st and the start of August is the peak uncertainty. And if Congress can't reach a deal, the federal government effectively turns into a cash and carry operation. It can only spend what it has on hand. And so there'll have to be choices made on an individual or a program level to decide, okay, we're going to put certain things on hold. We're not going to do certain things because we can't afford them. Take, for example, Social Security and pension checks. The government pays out tens of billions of dollars in just the first few days of June. If there's a crisis in those first few days, will those checks go out on time? Will they be delayed? Could you be in a situation where Social Security beneficiaries might not get their checks this month or maybe into next month? That's something we could be looking at here. Parks could close down. We could see planning offices be shut down or have employees come to work but not be paid immediately. They wouldn't be able to be paid until the crisis is over, potentially. We look to previous government shutdowns as a guide to what happened, but this shutdown is different. The last few shutdowns have been about Congress being unable to decide how to allocate money. The money was around, they just couldn't agree on how to spend it. This time around, there's not really enough money to be spent. And so it's a whole different problem that may need to be handled a whole different way.
So with the knowledge that the causes of this holdup are different, does it seem like it might drag on longer? And are there specific things that would be affected in Alaska in the longer term?
Yeah, in the longer term, we have to be worried about the way a debt crisis triggers a broader economic crisis. That's what we've been hearing from a lot of the credit ratings agencies, economic analysts, who are saying that, you know, the U.S. dollar is a cornerstone of the global financial system. If that cornerstone isn't there anymore, then you're looking at a situation where we could be going into a broader economic recession. That's when I talk to members of the Permanent Fund Corporation, that's what they're worried about because they have to invest on behalf of the state. And so they're watching carefully, starting to shift money into things like gold and precious metals that are alternatives to the U.S. dollar.
Okay. It seems like there's still a chance to, you know, to borrow your metaphor from earlier, for Uncle Bob, or for, in my case, Father Bob, to get that four-wheeler on the trailer safely. Is there still a path forward here before June 1st?
There is, but time's running out. They've only got a few days left before that window of uncertainty, that window of danger opens. And so it doesn't mean that there will be a crisis, a debt crisis, immediately on June 1st, but that's when the danger period opens. And economists, government officials are on guard for what they're calling X Day. That's the day when the federal government effectively runs out of money.
Or when Uncle or Father Bob tips the ATV off the trailer and it just rolls on its side.
Yep, we don't know when and if he'll be able to stick the landing.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks. An opossum that spent months on the loose in Homer has a new home at the Alaska Zoo.
In this case, I think it has a happy outcome for everyone, but that can't always be the case with when we're dealing with invasive species.
That's ahead on Alaska News Nightly. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
A man has been arrested for illegally selling alcohol to homeless residents in Anchorage. The State Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office announced the arrest in a statement today. It says control office investigators, in collaboration with the Anchorage Police Department, issued an arrest warrant to 59-year-old Brandon Reed on May 12th. An arrest warrant is also outstanding for Reed's alleged accomplice, 43-year-old Andrew Tyone. According to investigators, between January of last year and this May, Reed and Tyone bought more than 3,500 bottles of vodka from Costco, along with a stock of water bottles. Reed then allegedly dumped out the water, filled the bottles with vodka, and sold them at the Sullivan Arena shelter and other places frequented by people who are homeless. Officials with the control office estimate that the two men made more than $140,000 from illegal alcohol sales. Reed was arrested on two counts of selling alcohol without a permit, as well as a count of reckless endangerment and a count of driving with a revoked license. For the second time in a decade, utilities from Homer to Fairbanks have had to take a hard look at their heavy dependence on Cook Inlet natural gas as the state warns of shortfalls. They're patching together other ways to power Alaskans' homes in the next few years, all of which rely at least partly on natural gas. Alaskans across the political spectrum are now acknowledging that renewable energy will have to provide a larger share of Alaska's power in the future if utilities want to keep rates stable. KDLL Sabine Pooks reports in this final installment about Cook Inlet's energy crisis.
5,000 feet underground, near a bend in the Kenai River, there's a reminder of just how important it is for Alaska to have a reliable supply of natural gas. The Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage Facility was built the last time the state faced a gas crisis. Lindsay Hobson is a spokesperson for gas utility NSTAR, which runs the facility. She stands in one of the rooms where natural gas is compressed before it's stored for use in the winter months.
Well, I think back in 2010, we were certainly looking at the future of the Cook Inlet and seeing a shortfall on the horizon.
Now, NSTAR's part of a group of six gas-dependent utilities meeting monthly to brainstorm responses to Alaska's current gas crisis. State officials warn there won't be enough available gas from Cook Inlet to meet demand in as few as 4 years. NSTAR is fully reliant on Cook Inlet gas to meet its heating needs, while local electric utilities are around 85% dependent. Hobson says utilities are trying to figure out what comes next and plan on coming out with a report with some possibilities in June.
I think that all options are on the table at this point.
So what are the options? As a quick fix, some utilities with near-expiring contracts are signing agreements to get gas from others who still have years before theirs run out. And now utilities are talking about importing liquefied natural gas from out of state. That's the transportable form of gas that Kenai used to ship out by the billion cubic feet to Japan. LNG would either come from long-term contracts or from the spot market, whose prices fluctuate widely. In any case, imported gas would be more expensive than the gas utilities get today and could raise residential rates by as much as 30% by some estimates. Champions of the long-fought Alaska LNG project, meanwhile, say it's time to start thinking about that plan again. The project would send natural gas down from the North Slope to Nikiski for export and use in state. Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Peter Machicki worked for years at the now mothballed export facility in Kenai, which for years sent Cook Inlet gas overseas to Japan.
And we have renewed engagement. I've had some calls recently with some offers to go to Japan on some trips.
Cost has long been an obstacle to the Alaska LNG project, and some previous advocates say it's never going to happen. But Machicki hopes enthusiasm from buyers abroad could finally push it across the finish line and keep gas flowing into South Central from in-state.
And I think it would buy us the time for a responsible transition where renewables will fit into the global portfolio.
Renewables advocates say the time for that transition is now. Solar and wind projects are becoming cost competitive with natural gas. Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration is working on a bill to make geothermal projects more affordable, too. Oil and gas company Hilcorp itself is looking into turning some of its old Cook Inlet oil platforms into tidal sites. Today, the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project across Ketchumek Bay provides the cheapest power to the rail belt. That's the area between Homer and Fairbanks. But as of today, that's one of the only large-scale renewable projects in the region. Chris Rose with the Renewable Energy Alaska Project says utilities just aren't doing enough. He says it's time to stop waiting around for the big home run.
The fact is that we haven't got a gas pipeline yet, even though we've been talking about it for 40 years. And we've also never gotten at a hometown discount on oil and gas in Alaska. So even though we produce oil and gas, we have some of the highest energy costs in the country.
He's been trying to get legislation passed that would set a renewable portfolio standard, which would require utilities to get a certain percentage of their energy from renewables by a certain date. As it stands, those utilities have their own goals to incorporate renewables into their portfolios already. Rose says aspirational goals aren't good enough. His legislation would fine utilities that don't meet laid out standards. He says those standards would help generate competition among private energy companies who would generate power in state to sell back to utilities. And he says unlike LNG on the world market, the power generated from renewable projects in Alaska could be more stably priced. He says it's not just about your gas and electric bill, although that's important. It matters a lot for the broader state economy.
We already have very high energy prices in the rail belt, and so we can't really afford to be increasing our energy costs. That's going to impact businesses. It's going to impact people's decisions to invest here and to live here.
In the absence of action from lawmakers and utilities, some Alaskans are taking matters into their own hands.
We've got multiple heat sources here. One of them is the wood cook stove, which is our primary heating surface in the wintertime.
Scott Waterman is the homeowner we talked to in the first story. He says the solar panels, heat pumps, and other energy-efficient upgrades on his house in Homer help reduce the pressure he's putting on the system.
If we could get 25% of the homes on the Kenai with 5 to 10 kilowatts of solar on them, that would make a significant dent in the amount of gas that Homer Electric has to purchase and keep our costs from rising quite as rapidly.
Beyond the grid, he sees his upgrades as a way to keep his own rates stable. Waterman, as an energy efficiency enthusiast, is maybe more attuned to his own rates than most. But at the end of the summer, when they switch on their lights and turn up their thermostats again, all Alaskans might have to be thinking a lot more about how their lives could be impacted when the costs of doing so are a lot higher. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
That was the final in a four-part series on Cook Inlet's gas supply shortages. You can listen to all the stories in order at kdll.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Not yet a member of this station? Well, today is a perfect day to become one. You simply make a donation. It's that simple.
Firefighters have nearly contained this year's biggest wildfire so far, and rainy weather that's scheduled to set in tonight should help them control that fire near Delta Junction and dampen fire danger elsewhere around the eastern interior. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Barley Way fire grew to about 310 acres in an agricultural area south of Delta by Monday, 2 days after it was reported. It burned through dry grass and trees, helped along by warm and windy weather, but a quick initial response by the State Forestry Division and Alaska Fire Service smoke jumpers and the onset of cooler, rainier weather helped to halt the fire's growth.
The Barley Way fire is still at 90% contained, and it is still at 310 acres.
Forestry spokesperson Lily Coyle says two hotshot crews from Fairbanks brought in Saturday night and a dozen White Mountain firefighters who arrived Tuesday spent that day knocking down small fires within that 310 acres.
The White Mountain module along with the two hotshot crews, we're still going through and performing mop-up operations, looking for hot spots, extinguishing any hot spots, and then they were also still working on putting in containment lines.
Coyle said Wednesday afternoon that if all continued to go well, forestry officials likely would send the Midnight Sun hotshots and Chena hotshots back to Fairbanks.
The White Mountain firefighters will remain on site along with the heavy equipment to just make sure that there's no new spread, and will continue performing mop-up and containment operations.
The firefighters are likely to get some help from more cool and rainy weather, forecast to set in tonight around much of the eastern interior.
We're looking at a line of showers to hit Fairbanks Thursday afternoon time frame, and then have scattered showers in the forecast through Friday morning.
Fairbanks National Weather Service meteorologist Dakari Anderson says there's even a slight chance that some of that precipitation could come in the form of snow in some higher elevations.
So you're looking at like the White Mountains, 40 Mile Country, could see some chances with snow, just with some cooling temperatures there, but otherwise everywhere else should be seeing rain.
Coyle says the near containment of the Barley Way fire and the prospect of more rain led forestry officials on Tuesday to lift a burn ban they'd imposed on the Delta area, but it remains in effect for Fairbanks, Salcha, and elsewhere around the rail belt. Forestry officials say the Barley Way fire was one of 22 human-caused fires reported last week around the state. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A timber company owned by Yakutat's Village Corporation has filed for bankruptcy this month after a bank sued the corporation over $13 million in outstanding debts. It's the latest chapter in the story of a contentious logging operation that many of the corporation's shareholders did not support. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
Yak Timber filed for bankruptcy on May 11th. In a letter to shareholders the next day, the village corporation Yaktak Kwan said they filed only after exhausting all efforts to negotiate a resolution with the bank. Yakutat's tribal government says the lawsuit is further dividing a town that was already stressed. Many residents didn't agree with the logging operation in the first place. Andrew Gildersleeve is the tribe's executive director. He says, above all, there's grief.
The matter itself is almost like a broken piece of glass with so many edges, it's impossible to pick up without getting cut. There's shock of what's happened to tribal lands and disbelief that there could be a claim of this size.
The lawsuit, brought by AgWest Farm Credit, alleges that Yak Timber owes the bank about $13.3 million in unpaid loans.
Where did all that money that they borrowed go?
Cindy Bremner is a shareholder and the former CEO of the corporation. She's now Yakutat's mayor. She says shareholders have a lot of questions the corporation won't answer. It's straining relationships in the small town of 600.
We live in a small town. We're all related. And it's caused quite a divide between those on that board and then pretty much the rest of the shareholders.
The suit says the corporation hasn't made payments since the middle of 2022. The bank is seeking repayment, interest, and attorney's fees. It lists equipment, along with timber, proceeds, and property as collateral. In a letter to shareholders on April 7th, corporation leadership said their board, quote, is united in every possible effort to address the allegations, end quote. Sherry Jensen, the corporation's CEO, said in a written statement that they had no comment for this story. But as recently as October, Jensen told Coast Alaska that paying back the loans wouldn't be a problem after they sell Yak Timber's logging equipment.
Banks don't lend money to broke companies. They just don't. And, you know, we had a business plan, and they bought into it.
The Yaktak Kwan Corporation was formed in the early 70s after the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act took effect. The federal law exchanged indigenous land rights for money, divvying up the remaining land among a few hundred village corporations. Those corporations are charged with making a profit for their shareholders. The Kwan created its timber subsidiary in 2018 to harvest 21 million board feet of timber on its land. It logged about three-quarters of that, shipping nearly 4,000 log trucks worth of wood to China. As Yak Timber pursued different logging projects, opposition grew among shareholders. Some wanted the corporation to seek other resource revenue, such as carbon credits. Eventually, Yak Timber announced last fall that it would sell off its assets. But the company continued to harvest timber at a place called Humpback Creek, which the local and regional tribal governments say is culturally and historically significant. They, along with the regional corporation Sea Alaska, have requested Yak Timber stop logging there. The corporation faces a lawsuit from shareholders as well. Some are worried that their land could be lost as collateral for their debt. Amanda Bremner is a cousin to the mayor.
I am incredibly concerned, not just for the risk to existing land, but for what this means for the future of our company and all of our shareholders.
She and another shareholder chair a coalition that is seeking a change. Their lawsuit, filed on May 9th, asks the court to step in and force the corporation to hold an election for all 9 seats on the board. Yak Tak Kwan hasn't held an election in a couple of years, which led to a state fine. Amanda Bremner says taking the corporation to court was a difficult decision, but many shareholders share her goals.
To see our corporation flourish and thrive and be successful and ethical and rooted in Indigenous value and to have business practices reflect that.
The loaning bank will not comment. In a separate court filing, the bank seeks to repossess a tug and barge they loaned Yak Timber for $3.3 million. Later, they asked the court to ban the corporation from moving the barge, saying it was uninsured. The corporation has disputed this and filed its own motions. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Well, after almost 2 months on the lam in Homer, Grubby the opossum is going to a new home at Anchorage's zoo. Homer police say an officer was able to capture the female opossum in a garbage can yesterday morning, but not before she bit his hand. Jason Herrmann is the fish and game biologist who first examined Grubby.
Some people would call her cute, some would call her a little mean looking.
Grubby arrived in Homer in March after hitching a ride in a shipping container from Washington State. She was named after the street where she was first spotted, Grubstake Avenue, and she immediately divided the Kenai Peninsula town. Opossums don't live in Alaska, so she's considered an invasive species, and there were concerns about her bringing new diseases or eating indigenous animals. Because of that, some, including Fish and Game staff, wanted her dead. Others wanted her saved, launching the hashtag Free Grubby. Herrmann says when the Alaska Zoo offered up a spot, the decision was made that Grubby would live.
In this case, I think it has a happy outcome for everyone, but that can't always be the case with when we're dealing with invasive species.
Grubby arrived last night at the Alaska Zoo. Its director, Pat Lampe, says the opossum is likely to be a permanent resident.
It's another rescue, not something native to Alaska, but they do get as far north as into Canada. And so we decided we would go ahead and try to make a home for it.
Lampe says Grubby may become part of an exhibit on invasive species in Alaska. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Wesley Early, and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.